That's
Hello
all
and welcome to 35 Minute Movies, a Vin Diesel podcast. This is a podcast where we're talking all things Vin Diesel. We're going through his entire filmography and ranking and reviewing them all. And this is a very special episode. This is technically the last episode. We said last week was the last episode. That was the last proper episode. This is the last film-based episode. Today, Fast and Furious 9, the Fast Saga, came out in UK cinemas. I went to go and see it earlier today, so it's quite fresh in my mind. You saw it a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about it. I'm Cameron, and as always, I'm joined by Vin Diesel's number one fan, Oase. How are you doing?
I'm really excited to talk about this. We talked about last week was our sort of last proper episode in terms of the build-up to Fast 9, because that's essentially what it was, and now we're finally here, and it's sort of crazy, actually, I think, to say that we've seen a brand new Fast and Furious film in cinemas. Like, it's been 4 years since the last main F&F movie.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was having a thought today while I was watching it. I was like, I've only ever seen Furious 7 in the cinemas. That's the only one I've ever
seen.
So this was my first one with knowledge of Fast and Furious. Like, I hadn't seen any of the other Fast and Furious. I went to go and see Furious 7. So this was my first one with knowledge of all of the Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah.
And invested in the story, I have to say. Heavily invested in the story.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Speaking of the story, do you want to do a non-spoiler
Yeah, so basically the film picks up a few years after Fate of the Furious, and Dom and Letty are now parents, and they're raising Brian, who's a kid now, but they miss the action, and they sort of miss the old days, and then sort of through a chain of events, they're pulled back into their old lives to retrieve this item called Project Ares, which in the wrong hands can sort of wipe out any technology on the planet. However, there's also someone else after this device, and it's Jacob, Dominic's estranged little brother. And he's working with Cypher to go after it. And it's a globe-trotting adventure.
It's a globe-trotting adventure. It does take us around many, many locations. We go to just a small sort of Spanish island sort of situation. Yeah. I don't know what's going on with that. And then
of course,
we're off Edinburgh.
Yes,
is the main one. London and Edinburgh. It was nice to see Edinburgh on the big screen. Geography.
Not
how
good.
We feel about the geography wasn't amazing. They do switch sides. No, I was trying to follow it, and I was thinking to myself, like, are they really there? So, yeah. So in the film, they follow Jacob around all of these countries and that, and they do end up in Edinburgh. And we should really just touch on the beginning of the episode here. How we felt about Edinburgh in this, because the Scottish accents are a bit iffy. So they've obviously, there's a big chase sequence that goes through. They start off in the Royal Mile. Is the Royal Mile, isn't it? Then they start off and then they just zoom past like all the Avengers Infinity War locations.
Then they're in the Grass Market, and then they're in the West End.
Yeah.
Then they're back on the Royal Mile. It's the geography is not good. Can you give us a wee impression of this Scottish accent that they do in the film?
It was stuff like, there's a security alert. And I was like,
that's my car, pal.
That's my car, pal. They'd clearly,
the comms are noon.
They'd clearly ADR'd it all in.
Oh, 100%.
But with a non-Scottish actor, which was so blatantly clear.
So bad.
It was really upsetting to see. I thought Edinburgh looked quite beautiful. Looking all snazzy.
I think it's, aside from like, you know, films like Trainspotting, which are obviously entirely Edinburgh centric, it's my favourite portrayal of Edinburgh in a movie. I love Edinburgh sequences in Infinity War, but this, they really capitalise on this being Edinburgh and like the scenery and the locals. And whereas in Infinity War, that's not much of a, like, you know, they're actively talking about the tourists and what they wear. And because in a way, Edinburgh is very, you know, different from a lot of the world, even sort of just London in terms of like the culture. And I love that they addressed that. Like, I thought that was just really neat.
Oh yeah, totally. It was, they made some jokes about the guy, the people in the weird haircut. They made use of it, which was really nice to see.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the things that I really enjoyed about that. And yeah, the chase sequence in that particular, and I think the action in this entire movie is really solid. I think it takes up to like different levels, but I also feel just insane levels that we've never really seen before.
They reach new heights, you could
yeah,
say.
Just new heights. Yeah, new heights, you could say. We'll talk more about that later. But I also like the way it balanced. I think this is the most sort of personal and emotional Fast movies, which is saying something, because a lot of them do have these melodramatic moments, but this one was the one that it didn't feel as forced in a way. Mm-hmm. It felt very earned in what it was doing. There's some great sequences that are just heart to hearts with characters and just really great character moments and really great backstory. It just balances this action really well with all these little moments. Yeah. And it really just sort of captured me, I guess. It was just, I didn't expect this movie. I really, after Fast and Furious 8, I didn't expect much from this at all. I was just sort of, I was expecting more guns blazing, but then you remember Justin Lin's involved and you're like,
and it shows.
I think the franchise is better for having him involved, and I'm glad he's doing the next two. I think he's doing the next two at least. I don't
he's
know how you felt
it
about
out,
that,
which is beautiful. I agree. I think for me this felt like a tonal return to, you know, 4, 5, and 6, like that sort of trifecta of Fast, which is arguably where Fast sort of really took off. It felt like a tonal return to that, because we were chatting before and I said my issue with Fast 8 was it felt big for the sake of it. You know, it felt dumb for the sake of, you know, adding and sort of doing more and sort of topping itself. And the, you know, it's Fast 8 is one of those films that like look, this franchise is borderline a parody now, but Fast 8 is the film that felt most like that. It felt most like a parody of the franchise. And I didn't feel that this way. Like, yes, there are much bigger, crazier, ridiculous action sequences, but it's grounded with that genuine heart. Like, and that story feels like a Fast and Furious story. You know, that brother dynamic between Dom and Jacob, you know, you really get invested in it. And I think that's just because Lin knows this world and he knows these characters enough to balance out the crazy, ridiculous, unbelievable stuff with the very human family soap opera aspect of Fast. And that's what I loved about it, I think.
And I think there's also, on top of that, there is also a self-awareness. And I think a self-awareness that they were even more self-aware this time. I mean, in the film, they even make fun of the fact that they, like, Roman thinks he's invincible because of the fact he survived a really stupid encounter at the beginning, but she shouldn't have survived, really. Like, any normal person in real life, that would not have happened. And I think the self-awareness is really apparent in this one, but again, it does match up very well with the seriousness of some of the other aspects of this movie. In the action, it just really, it was so well directed and just just edited together in a way that wasn't jarring. It just felt like everything sort of naturally moved together. I think the only jarring thing was Cardi B, and that was about it. I don't know how you felt about Cardi B's appearance.
That was a horrible cameo. I literally sat there watching that and I was like, this is the worst scene in a Fast and Furious movie. It's completely unnecessary and she's awful in it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Do you want to talk spoiler free about Vin Diesel quickly and how Dom is in this movie? Because I think we're looking at one of the best Dom portrayals in the franchise.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've nailed it. They have absolutely nailed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is everything you expect the character to be. And more, and we'll talk about this in the spoiler. We're gonna have sort of spoiler half, and more, and this is the most nuanced look at Dom, and I never thought I would ever say that about like a Fast and Furious movie, but you really dig deep into this character in this film, and everything just makes sense. Like it makes every character decision of his over the last 20 years just make sense, I think. And in that sense, it's a really great portrayal of the Toretto's in general, because I would argue the same for Mia as well, because there's a lot of backstory behind their family, and it recontextualizes so much.
Yeah, that's what Jin said. He said it recontextualizes Fast and the Furious, and I think he does. And I think it's all about four. I know it took 9 films to get here, but it really does open up every character decision every decision this character has made in a new way. It doesn't just affect the Fast and the Furious in some ways. It affects everything and every step that he's taken in his life, and you can see it right there, and it's incredible, and the way it's done is masterful. I think it is one of the best. I think some of the best scenes in the franchise now are in this movie, in these scenes.
Yeah. And what do you think of Diesel's performance? Because I thought he was great.
I think he's really good. I think, I don't think it's his best performance as Dom, but I do think it's the best portrayal of the character, if that makes sense. I think it's the best written the character has been. I don't think Vin's at his best here, but...
You know what? He looks like he's having a ball, though.
Oh, yeah.
He looks like he's clearly passionate about this franchise, which is so rare 20 years in.
Exactly. I think he's so perfect for this role, and he's made it his own. And it's almost him at this point. If you look at Vin in real life and look at Dom in the movies, he is basically the same person. And that's weird to say, but very much there's a lot of values in this movie that transcend and go into
100%
into him and into the movie. And I was thinking about this today, and this is completely off topic because it's not really about Dom, but it just sort of came into my head that this franchise does better overseas than it does anywhere else in the world. It does better in different countries.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
It does better in Latin countries. It does better in Asian countries. It seems to be something about it that just sort of connects with everyone. I think there's something about it that just seems universally just great and easy to watch. And it just sort of...
I mean, I think its themes are definitely relatable no matter where in the world you are.
Exactly. And I think they're such accessible movies. And that's what I love about this. And this is so nuanced and just enjoyable for a movie like this. But yeah. Sorry, that was just a random tangent because I was thinking about just like some of the stuff that Dom says in this movie, and it seems very like, you're appealing, you're trying to mass appeal here. Like this is very much like ticking the boxes.
Mass appealing is hard to do. And the fact that this film does that so successfully time and time again, and the fact that this film knows what it is, what it wants to be, and it pulls that off so successfully every time, it is just brilliant filmmaking. To be that successful that long, like it is really brilliant filmmaking. I think
this is going to be the film that saves the cinemas. I think this is going to be the one that pulls them out.
Yeah,
I can feel
100%.
I posted 100%. This on my cinema's Facebook page, and the responses that I was getting, there were just loads of tags. They were just living for it, and I just it's going to do well here. It's going to do well in Korea. It's done well in Korea. It's overtaken Demon Slayer already, I'm pretty sure, this year. It's very well in Korea. It's going to do well in stuff like places like Peru. It's going to do places. It's just going to, everywhere in the world loves it. And I love that.
Last we checked, a couple weeks ago, in fact, we were talking about it. The box office had already smashed a quarter of a billion dollars internationally. It's not even opened in the US yet. You know, this was at the start of the month. It crossed a quarter of $1 billion. And, you know, after the year we've had, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I'm so excited to see what happens in the US. I'm so excited to see what happens here. So we'll just do some ratings before we move on to sort of spoiler stuff, and then sort of discussion on what's next, I guess, both in terms of the podcast and for these movies. So what are you thinking for an overall rating for the film?
I'm going to go 4 out of 5. Like, it is just, you know, I said this to you immediately coming out of my screening. It's immediately just one of my favorites in the franchise. Like, it's everything you expect and everything you want from a Fast and Furious movie, but it does all of those things so well. Like, it does the action, the drama, the sort of just the you know, silliness of it. It's just, it's all there and it's exactly what you want right now. And I can't, personally can't wait to rewatch it. So I'm going to go for.
Same.
It's really
just got me. And that's what I just did not expect. After Fast 8, I was just so down. Oh, I think that was one of the reasons I love this film so much, is the fact that it was a return to form. It was just back to where the franchise should be. And I think things are looking up for the next two films. I'm so excited to see what happens next. It's one of those ones where it's just, the film is great, sets up great things. It's got some, it's great performances, great portrayals of characters. It just, 4 out of 5, 100%.
I think I was really worried about the finale. And then I saw this, and now knowing that it's back in Justin Lin's hands, I have full faith. I'm like, all that trepidation is now gone having seen this.
Yeah. I sort of cut it off early, but Vin, I just want to jump in and we'll talk about it more.
Give me a rating.
We'll talk about it more in the next 5 minutes if you've seen the movie. I think you should stick around. 5. Easy 5, I think, for me.
Easy, it's an easy 5. Easy.
I think this is one of the best. It's the best written Fast and Furious movie, if that makes sense, in terms of characters. Not the best in terms of plot structure and narrative structure, but the actual character moments in the way that we learn about the villain, we learn about Dom, we learn about the history and the way it can sort of change in and just change the way we look at Dom in every single movie, I think is one of the, it's just the best.
100%.
I'm with you there. What are you thinking?
Oh, I'm with you there. 5 for Diesel. Yep. It's Dom at his very best. And I think Diesel brings everything to that character to make it so great. It's an easy 5 in terms of Dominic Toretto and Vin Diesel.
Actually, before we move on, we'll do the ranking we'll put this in the list. This is the list that next week will not matter. So it's tied with the top two. So this is the fight for the top three. So at number one, we have Fast 5, and number two, we have Furious 7. Do you think this is a better film than Furious 7 and Fast 5?
No, I don't. I think it's...
You don't think it's better than Furious 7?
No, I think it fits perfectly at 3.
Do you? I would, personally, I think it's better than Furious 7, but that's a dispute
for another time,
I guess.
No. You know what? I will say it's a better movie. I think I've always said Furious 7 is a 3-star movie. It's just made more special because of Walker's legacy.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a Vin Diesel podcast. And so actually, yes, I would say Fast 9 is a better movie than Furious 7.
I think this is the best Vin Diesel movie. Like in terms of Vin Diesel.
I don't want to put it above five because
I really love Fast 5. Like I really love Fast 5. And I think Fast 5's up there because of the overall ratings of 5, isn't it? Or something like that. Or did we give it like 4?
No, we gave 4. It 4, but still.
We gave it 4, so this is the same kind of rating. That's the thing. I don't know if this is my new favourite Fast and Furious movie. I think I need to see it again, which is the issue. Because I really love this, but I will go 2. I would say it's my number 2.
But well, we're going to talk more about rankings next week. So if you like...
Yeah, none of this like really we'll matters.
I feel like we'll get a good insight into it next week. Ooh. Yeah. Okay, I'm happy with that too.
You're happy with Fast 9 in second place.
There you go.
So let's jump into the spoilers. So if you've not seen Fast and Furious 9, I recommend tuning out and...
coming back.
Going to see the movie and then come back and tell us all about what you think, what you thought about it. But let's talk about...
I want to get the ball rolling with one thing.
Go on then. Let's hear it.
Space.
The final frontier. Yeah. And I did not think in that capacity. Looking at the trailer, I knew they were going to go at least... I thought that was going to end. I thought that was just going to be... They were going to maybe not quite make it into orbit. They were just going to kind of like... get to the upper atmosphere, but no, they make it into space. They go into the International Space Station. They like Roman and Tej get saved by the International Space Station in the end of it. That's and they're sitting there defying basically every law of physics known to man, floating there in like submarine suits.
the funniest part of that is they're talking about the laws of physics as they're going into space. Yeah. The other thing sort of related to that, the Tokyo Drift guys are back.
Yes, that was great. It was great to see them.
Which was fantastic, yeah.
I wish the reunion with Han was before they knew he was alive. Like, I wish we got to see, like, their reaction, basically, to finding out he was alive, which would have been really cool.
I wish there was more to that.
Yeah. Speaking of Han completely, he's got, like, a adoptive daughter now, I guess, in some some ways. The way they implement Han back is very interesting. So he's hired by Mr. Nobody when he goes back to Tokyo and take care of the bomb thing that they're looking after. And, save the key, and he on the mission he saves the girl, and then he has to go off the grid, so they kill him by faking his death with Shaw killing him for some reason.
I think Shaw was going after him, so they were this is the perfect opportunity to fake his death. And I love that scene, by the way. I love when he sort of infiltrated the house to steal this thing, and the parents die, and then the daughter's life is threatened. It felt like a samurai film, almost. Yeah. Like, it was very, very cool. And probably about the best way they could have brought this character back that didn't completely undercut, you know, Jason Statham's character, and it didn't completely undercut Furious 7. And I like that the people had this, like, the characters had the same reaction as the audience. And which is how, why. They handled it very well, I think.
Do you wish they hadn't told us, though? Do you wish they could have kept it a secret? I know they probably couldn't have, because of the aunties in the film, but do you think it would have been cool if they could have kept this a secret?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm watching this film thinking, when's Han going to show up? And they do the little, like any sort of big character return, they tease it before they show it.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they're teasing it, I'm like, It's Han. How cool would it be if you didn't know it and you're seeing these teasers and you're like, oh my God, is it who, you know? I think they could have hidden it. I didn't know Sung Kang was going to be in it until the first trailer dropped.
That's what I was thinking. I don't think the film press even knew that he was in the movie until they dropped it in the trailer.
No one
And even then, they didn't even need to have it in the trailer. Like, that was such an unnecessary addition.
Yeah. There's so much you can show without needing to show. Like, yes, he's got some cool action sequences, and they tease that. There's other stuff you can show. You can cut around that. I think it would have made for such a great surprise.
Yeah.
But I know they wanted him on the press tour because he's, you know, worked with Justin Lin since they were, you know, like, they've worked with each other for about 20 years, and I get that. But I just sort of wish that they kept it a secret.
Yeah. Do you know what was kept a secret, though? For me, at least, I had no clue it was in it. The flashback sequences with Dominic Toretto. That was mind-blowing to me. The film starts off with the 80s Universal logo, which I thought was a nice touch, and I was like, are we starting off? And I was thinking, I thought the Fast and the Furious had a middle-of-the-road Universal logo. I'd have thought, like, oh, we're going to go back to 2000. We're going back to 2001. We're going back to see, like,
that's a nice observation. I didn't notice that. I didn't link it with the logo.
Did you not? I was like, oh, we're going back in time with the Universal logo. And then, we end up in 1989 with how Dominic Toretto's dad dies.
And fantastic sequence.
It's such a great sequence. And Michael Rooker showing up as well. I had no clues in the movie.
I had read that casting. I thought Michael Rooker was playing their dad, not their dad's best friend, pretty much. I also like, we did sort of jokingly make predictions about would they de-age Vin and John. I'm glad they didn't. The actors they got to play their younger version were so good.
Spoiler.
So perfectly cast. Those are some of the best scenes in the film. Those are some of the most dramatic scenes in the film.
That's what I was kind of alluding to in the previous section, is the fact that these flashbacks. They were doing the recontextualization. This was all sort of it has an effect on every single movie, I feel. Some of the best sequences in Fast and Furious is some of these flashback sequences, you know, and it just
their race. The race
is really cool.
So good.
Dom sort of finding out about his just sort of realizing everything wasn't as it seems, and like, you know, I mean, just with his dad and stuff like that, and his family.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
Yeah, and just some of the values his dad taught him that he kind of kept on, basically, which was really cool. I just love the aesthetic. I think they really nailed the old timey look as well.
Oh, like 100%.
The color, the saturation. It really, if you go back and watch the Fast and the Furious, they sort of match in terms of color saturation for some reason. It's really odd.
The other thing I want to mention is it makes sense as to why Jacob's never been mentioned, because this was another one of my fears was, oh no, how are they going to include a brother that's never been mentioned in 8 films? They do a really good job of you know, basically, Vin thinks that Jacob killed their dad, and for a while that's how it seemed, and it makes sense as to why they aren't so cut off.
Yeah.
And I liked that, because I wasn't ever feeling like, I got the sense, I was like, oh yeah, you can understand why he keeps this hidden. You know, why Jacob's not part of his family to him anymore. Like, you really get that.
Yeah. It doesn't even seem out of character for why Tom would leave him behind, which is really, really good. And I was really worried about that, I have to say. Yeah. Another thing, you made a prediction. We made a prediction about the aging, which never happened. But another thing you made a prediction about was the socket wrench. I mean, what was it? One of the famous lines was, like, that's one of the things that Dom is known for in the first Fast and Furious.
In the first Fast, is he basically got arrested in prison for half beating a guy to death with a socket wrench. Now, I was saying to Cameron, and we talked about it on the podcast, I thought it was Jacob he half beat to death. It wasn't quite correct. It wasn't Jacob. It was because of Jacob. And you see the scene. And that's what everyone was talking about in the press too. When they say you see a scene from Fast and Furious 1, it's that. It's, you find out why Dom is this, you know, sort of criminal, this big bad criminal in the world. One thing we never called was a cameo from Jason Statham.
Yes, I was really of semi hoping, like, I it clicked a couple minutes in while he was punching the guy that I thought that it was Han, but I was really hoping it was going to be some kind of Hobbs and Shaw setup or something like that. I was really hoping like Dwayne would show up, just to kind of, because I didn't think Statham was even going to remotely be in this, but I was hoping Dwayne would show up for something. But even then, I'm glad. It kind of starts off with Statham punching a guy instead of a punching bag. Door, the knock at the door, goes and sees who's at the door. It's Han. Cuts. And you're
It cuts.
Would you like to think he got justice? What do you think happens there? Does he fight him? Does he shake his hand and go, good game, I'm alive? But
well, this is the thing. It's Justin Lin promised justice was coming. But everyone was like, no, because Deckard's been accepted into this family. So how can justice truly be coming? But it looks like we actually might get our justice still, because it looks like they're setting up for this Han Deckard face-off. And I'm so... I hope they really play... This is what I think is going to happen. I think Fast 10 and 11... is going to see sort of like a civil war type thing. You know, think Captain America Civil War, and they're divided. I think we're going to see a division between the families, and it's going to be Dom and Han and their side. And then it's going to be the Shaws. You know, you've got Vanessa Kirby, you've got Luke Evans, you've got Helen Mirren and Hobbs, and their side of, like, possibly even Ryan Reynolds, Kevin Hart. And it's going to be this clash of these two teams. I think possibly that would be fucking sick. I want John Cena back. I really want John Cena back.
I think he'll be back. There's no way.
I think he'll be back. So he basically joins the family. He doesn't join the family, but he ends on good terms with the family. And I'm just really excited by the idea of seeing Dwayne Johnson and John Cena share the screen together. I don't know why. That, like, the childhood wrestling fan in me is like, please, please.
Please let it happen. Yeah.
No, yeah, totally. Gal Gadot. So Sung Kang, the actor who plays Han, basically in the press tour has been like urging fans to start a petition to bring her back.
Really?
Yeah. So that would be cool. I don't know.
It would be if cool.
He's teasing anything. I want Luke Evans back. I want Luke Evans back.
He wasn't dead.
He wasn't dead. He was in Furious. He was in Fate. He had a cameo in Fate.
So he did. Yeah.
Get him, Vanessa, and Jason together. The three of them. I want to see the Shaw family. Yeah, I want to see the full Shaw family.
All coming out of portals. The Shaw family comes out of one portal.
Any characters you want to see?
There's one I don't want to see back. And we can touch on this kind of to close up, because it closes up the movie as well. Paul Walker. I really hope Brian doesn't come back. But they almost sort of nearly did it.
They have a lot of referencing of Brian in this one.
Yeah. It's almost like they're trying to set it up. It felt to me like they're almost trying to set it up a little bit to say, well, he's still alive and he could still come back.
Do you want to talk a little bit about what happens at the end then?
Yeah, so it ends up with as it does, we're popping the Coronas, we're having a family barbecue. And little Brian's going to say grace, and Dom's like, hold up a minute, there's still an empty chair. And Mia's like, he's on his way. And then the bloody blue, is it Subaru? Blue fucking car.
His blue car.
Yeah, his blue car comes pulling into the drive. And you're like, oh, there's Brian. And then the film ends. But there's a lot of referencing of Brian. He's protecting the kids at home so no one can attack them. He's,
you know, I think it was necessary. I think part of it was necessary because you're bringing Mia back.
Mm-hmm.
And how can you bring Mia back without bringing any mention of, you know, Brian? And
Dom comes back from the same circumstances that Brian should be coming back from, you know? So it's
exactly.
It's one of those things where it's like they have all they gone off to protect their kids, but
explaining it. We were talking about it earlier. I hope they don't, but I feel like we might, because I know his brothers, his family are still involved with the franchise. They're on set. Yeah. They consult, you know, they're consultants on the franchise, and I love that. But remember, they're the brothers brought him back in 7.
Yeah, and that's why I think even in a fight scene in a 10 or 11, probably 11, I think there's a chance, there's a small chance we'll see him again.
Would you be opposed to the idea of, like, so say it's 11, and say, so we don't see him in 10, we don't see him in 11 for the main stuff, but it's their ending, and it's like, maybe, I don't know how they're going to wrap up the entire franchise.
You know, it's maybe like the end of Spy Kids 3. And then it comes, somebody order the Dinkler, and it's like,
it's just Paul Walker, no.
Yeah, just Paul Walker, like, exits a Subaru, and he's like, I'm here, guys.
They'll be doing, like, some super barbecue. Would you be completely opposed to them bringing him back just for that? Like, to a final shot rounding it out?
I think I would be okay with him doing some action stuff just for, like, a fight. Like, say the portal, like, their version of the portal sequence. I think I'd be okay with that if everyone was coming in to sort of help out this.
Yeah.
And he showed up just to sort of, just as even just like a tiny in the background, not like a main thing. But it depends what the family's comfortable with. You know what I mean? It's not my decision to make.
If
Finn gets approval and says, hey, do you want, like, it's not our place, but it feels a bit unclean. And it felt a bit unclean, him coming back, because it wasn't sort of earned yet, I guess. You know what I mean?
I was worried. I was worried when he says, oh, there's a seat empty. At first, my heart was like, oh no, that's so sad. And I was like, wait, he's alive in this franchise. And then she's like, he's coming. And I'm like, don't. I was like,
mine was,
like,
just panic.
I'm going to hear a doorbell. I was like, are we going to hear a doorbell? And it's just, I was like, don't. And so when they ended it the way they did, I thought it would be, like, it got me.
Yeah.
Seeing his car, it got me. And I'm glad they ended it there and they didn't do anything more, because it made it an emotional callback.
Yeah.
But I was worried for a second that, because you're right, it wouldn't have been earned this close to Furious 7. But we'll see. I don't know.
We'll see. So that'll kind of wrap up. We've gone quite over time. We'll see how this edits out. I've been Cameron. Actually, I'll change that. So this is the last episode, technically. We're going to do next week, I think, or next week or in 2 weeks' time, depending on when schedules align, because I don't know, we're busy people. We got stuff to do. Things to do. We're going to do a ranking. We're going to bring top five to the table and sort of talk that out. We'll scrap the ranking we have for now and just sort of leave it because it's gone crazy. So we'll see how that goes. Thank you for listening to this review of Fast and Furious 9. Let us know what you thought about the film in the comments, or you can tweet me at CamsOG on Twitter. You can also find my other stuff on www.ohifilms.com. No one does a www anymore. Where I do another podcast called Four Eyes and the Giant with Geordie Steele, where we talk about nerdy topics every week. At CamsOG on Twitter and Instagram. Where can the people find you, Oasis?
You can find me on Twitter at OasisWays. Please, I'm more than happy to take thoughts on Fast and Furious 9. It's been fueling my past couple of weeks. It's just nothing but Fast and Furious tweets. And you can read my Fast and Furious reviews on www.thefilmbite.com.
We're doing the W's.
I've got a full Fast ranking there as well and everything. So you can go see where Fast 9 landed, although I feel like I will be getting rejigged once I rewatch it on Sunday.
It's a bit low. Yeah. I think you, I saw your Letterboxd and I was like, I need to see
well,
where
it's
this is gonna
gone
end up.
Down on the actual article. So that's why I think.
Yeah, I'm seeing it again probably next Tuesday, so I'm hoping I'll have a sort of definitive sort of look at it by then.
I'll come with you, bro.
Please like and subscribe and share with your pals. If you're Vin Diesel, please contact us. We'd love to speak to you.
Yes. We would, please.
So we'll see you next week for the last ever 35 Vinit movies, and we'll have a reveal of who the next person is. We're gonna do a thing of. So we'll see a podcast for. So we'll see you then. Bye.